Good morning and welcome to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future, the live local show that's all about the issues of aging. I am so glad to have you with us this morning. You will need a pencil and paper. You will need to put your brain on. If you're listening to this in the archive, go get a pencil and paper. Put your brain on. And for the next 52 minutes, we're going to talk about serious stuff. And we're going to talk about the ongoing war against seniors and the disabled and the frail. And we're going to talk about a lot of statistics. Mark Twain said a long time, there are three kinds of lies. Lies, damned lies, and statistics. Well, we're going to talk about studies and statistics. And they're really important for a couple reasons. One, they're going to tell us a story. And two, they're current. So if you're older, you know someone who's older, or you're going to get older, you need to pay attention to the next 50 minutes or so of this radio program. Because we're going to talk about lots of stuff, all revolving around the upcoming changes to healthcare and the war on seniors and long-term care and the disabled, and we're going to talk about the next 15 years as studies we're going to talk about today have projected, and I want you to pay attention. We're going to pull back the veil on supposition and try to point to reality as it affects all of us. Good morning. My name is Bob Scrivano, your host here for 18 years on KFBK. Been doing this a long time. Been around the block, know all the good people, know the not-so-good people, know the good nursing homes, know the good caregivers, and know the good whatever. By the way, if you ever need a caregiver, I know great agencies. I know great people who can help mom with her bathing or just general light housework or cooking or transportation or whatever you need. I know people who can do that stuff. Feel free to contact me. I'll give my contact information out in a second. But first, I have to say the stuff I have to say every week because someone will always get mad. Remember, I'm not an attorney. I don't practice law. I don't give legal advice. Everything we talk about here is my opinion and should not be taken as any form of legal, tax, or financial advice. I have a California insurance license. Have had for 40 years, maybe more than that, I don't know. 35 years, I don't know, a long time. I have a legal document assistant license recorded in Sacramento County, which allows me to prepare legal documents at your request. You've probably never heard of an LDA, but I am one. I am not securities licensed. I don't want to be, because then I can tell you the truth. What else? I'm a notary. But there's probably something else I've forgotten, but you, those of you that have been listening to me long enough know all of that. And I cannot program your Apple computer to talk to your wireless HP printer. And I don't want to. Okay, so that's the stuff I'm not. What is this show about? This show is about long-term care issues and growing older and taking care of the people that we love and providing for them and making sense out of what's happening in their lives and our lives and everybody's life. There's several ways to contact me. Simple way is to get on the phone and call me. My phone number from anywhere in the continental United States, maybe Alaska and Hawaii, I don't know. It's 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007. You can also go to my website. I have a good website. It's full of information. It's assets, A-S-S-E-T-S, and A-N-D, aging, A-G-I-N-G, assetsandaging.com, assetsandaging.com. You can go there. You can look up, you can listen to archived radio programs. You can listen to my archived podcast that I do every Wednesday at noon live on my website. They're always about 15 minutes long, and they're always on one subject and one subject alone. So you can always go there and get information. You can sign up for one of my upcoming workshops. My newest upcoming workshop will be listed right there on my webpage, and you can sign up. It'll have the directions. I will send you tickets. It'll have all the information, and you can sign up online. You can also email me a question if you need help. If any of the things we talk about today are needful for you, you can get a hold of me. And you can also just email me or call me to set up for a consultation. They're free. And you can come in and sit down and bring the family, and we'll talk about what's going on in your family and how I can help, and can I help you make sense out of what's going on. Okay. Where else do I want to begin? I think I've covered most everything. You know, for 18 years, Assets and Aging has been California's single best source of information on the issues of aging. And I want to talk broadly today. I want to talk about what's happening in this country, what's happening in California when it comes to the care of seniors, the frail, the disabled, the elderly. I want to talk about community-based services. I want to talk about nursing homes a little bit. And I have three studies in front of me. They're very exhaustive studies. And with your pencil and paper, you can write them down and you can go look them up. And you can read the studies. I'm going to read parts of them today because I think they're important. I think one of the things I've been bringing for 25 years of doing this, and people that come to my workshops will tell you this, I don't play around the edges. I will tell you what's really going to happen. I will tell you what's coming. I will tell you the things that families face in real time. Not somebody's dream. Not what somebody made up. You know, I had somebody come in to see me today who's looking for care for a loved one, and they said, you know, I've talked to two other people, and they told me there was nothing I could do, and they told me that. I cannot tell you how many times I've been told there's nothing you can do. There's always something you can do when it comes to the issues of aging. You may limit your own choices by the plans that you make, but there's always something you can do. So today I want to talk a little bit about care. And the first study I'm going to read from was done by Northwestern Mutual Life. And you can go Google this study. It's too bad there's no way I could put one of these in front of all of you as we go through it. But if you're awake and you can go to your computer, you can Google this study. And if you Google C.A.R.E. study, care study, but put a period after each letter in the word care. And it's about the caregiver conundrum, and it's put out by Northwestern Mutual Life, and it's a wonderful study on caregiving. And I want to take some time to set a basis for my discussion later that is going to be very in-depth and very detailed. In fact, I probably won't get through all of it today, but I will give you the studies, and you can look at them. And the reason I want you to look at them is they deal in reality. So the background, you know, this study, the CARE stands for costs, accountabilities, realities, and emotions. And again, if you want to look it up, it's Northwestern Mutual Life, or you can just Google care study, but put a period after each letter in the word care. So C period, A period, R period, E period, study, and you'll find it. I want to start out with, remember what I said, Mark Twain said. There are three kinds of lies. There are lies, damned lies, and statistics. We're going to give you some statistics. Roughly, now listen to this, and I want you to let this sink in for a bit. Because if you don't understand this, you are going to become a victim of what's going on in the United States in the healthcare system when it comes to seniors and the disabled and the frail elderly. Roughly 4 in 10 Americans are caregivers. There are, 300 and some million people in the United States, last time I heard? 40% of those would mean there are about 120, somewhere in that neighborhood, 120 million people who are caregivers. Let that sink in for a minute. Pardon me, every now and then you'll hear me take a drink of water because my voice is weak today, and I'm trying to stop from being hoarse. 4 in 10 Americans are caregivers. 4 in 10 Americans are currently caregivers. We're not talking about professional caregivers. We're talking about those too, but we're also talking about the person, the spouse that's taking care of the other spouse, the daughter that's taking care of her mother, the son that's taking care of grandpa, the whatever it is, the family that's taking care of Aunt Matilda. 4 in 10 Americans are caregivers. That means the number of people being impacted by the subject that I discuss here every day is staggering. I don't know how many people live in the Sacramento area. I don't know, 2 million, million and a half, 2 million, with Sacramento and Roseville and Elk Grove and, you know, all within 30 miles here, 2 million people. That means 800,000 people are caregivers in one way or another, 40%. It's an amazing statistic when you let it set in for a minute. Let me go on a little bit longer here. I'm going to give you some more interesting tidbits from this study. The majority of Americans feel caring for 2 elderly adults would be more difficult than caring for 2 toddlers. You hear all the time, oh, I've taken care of a 5-year-old. I can handle grandma. 2 adults between the ages of 85 and 90, 60% of all Americans think that taking care of 2 adults between 85 and 90 would be harder than taking care of 2 toddlers, and they're right. Taking care of a failing elder is not anything like taking care of your toddler. Your toddler doesn't have an opinion. Grandma does. Your toddler doesn't have the ability to get around to the same extent that your 70-year-old grandpa does. Just let that sink in for a minute. Almost everyone agrees who's done this. This is a poll of caregivers. It's 60% of those people who have actually been caregivers have said that taking care of a failing adult is harder than taking care of 2 toddlers. Non-experienced caregivers, I'm reading from this study, non-experienced caregivers primarily envision caregiving responsibilities to be chores. Just a third, only a third of caregivers expect to provide financial support. Aspects of caregiving envisioned to be provided if one becomes a caregiver. 78% think that their primary responsibility would simply be grocery shopping for grandma. Only 47% of people think that if they were taking care of grandma, their primary responsibility would be personal hygiene for grandma or grandpa. The thought of doing that, we don't even want to think about. So most people think that the single most important thing you can do for a senior, people who are you know, we're polled, one is grocery shopping, two is cooking, and three is laundry. That's what most people think their primary responsibilities would be if they were taking care of an elderly person. Experienced caregivers say something different. Experienced caregivers will tell you that their primary chore, time-wise, is grocery shopping, but you know what number two is? And among non-experienced caregivers, this one was number four. Providing emotional support. Providing emotional support. Making sure that I was involved with grandma or grandpa or mom or dad emotionally. So the difference between what inexperienced caregivers believe and experienced caregivers believe is completely different. Remember, I said only 47% of non-experienced caregivers thought they would be involved with personal hygiene. Experienced caregivers said 62% of them were involved in personal hygiene of that elder that they're taking care of. I don't want to be indelicate, so I'll let you imagine what personal hygiene involves. But stop and think about it for a minute, the difference between inexperienced caregivers and experienced caregivers. Among caregivers, 15% of caregivers felt tired all the time. 30% said they felt tired often. So 45% of all caregivers said they felt tired all the time or often. Physically tired. 73% of caregivers felt sad all the time, often, or sometimes. So 3/4 of all caregivers suffer sadness at least sometimes. 10% said they feel sad all the time. This is caregivers. 68% of all caregivers said they felt anxious all the time, often, or sometimes. 11% of all caregivers said they felt anxious all the time. Talk to a wife who's taking care of a husband who's a wanderer and let me know if she feels anxious all the time. It's a stunning a difference between the look at what people who are what people think caregiving entails and those people who are actually caregivers are feel about stuff. And yet 81% of all caregivers said they would be willing again to take care of an ailing friend or aged family member. Isn't that amazing? Aren't we an amazing country? Despite all of that, people who have done it said they would do it again if they, given all of that, they would still do it. Even though it takes an emotional toll, and as I've said more than once on this program, in 1/3 of the cases, the well spouse dies first, trying to take care of the other spouse. 2/3 of Americans, I'm still reading from this study, the care study, Two-thirds of Americans who anticipate incurring costs for providing care say it would make a great impact financially. 66% of caregivers said it had a great impact on them personally, financially, by taking care of someone in their family. 66%. It impacted them personally, financially. 4 in 10 Americans have made no plans for covering costs they may incur. 4 in 10 caregivers have not made any plans for covering the cost they may incur taking care of a loved one. I mean, just haven't done it. 40% have done nothing to plan for the cost to them, the financial cost to them personally. Percentage of monthly budget allocated to care, 26% of caregivers, of all the caregivers who were polled, 26% of the caregivers who were polled, they on average were spending 6% of their own money every month taking care of somebody. And when we get to the second half hour of the show and we get into some of these other studies, you'll understand why. So why am I talking to you about statistics? Because it's important to understand. Remember, the very first statistic was 40% of all Americans are acting as a caregiver for someone. 40%, 4 out of 10. Many of you are taking care of somebody now. Many of you, are taking care of mom or dad or grammy or grampy or your spouse or whoever it is. The vast majority of caregivers are unpaid. And yet, the vast majority of caregivers have said that on average, they spend 26% of their own money taking care of the person they're taking care of, in addition to all the money that the person needing care is spending on themselves. And when we get to the second set of studies, you'll understand why. My purpose in all of this is to begin to introduce you and to get you to look at caregiving in a real sense, not from just an emotional sense, but in a real sense of what it costs in time, what people's expectations are versus what the reality is. How many of you are prepared? And again, I'm not trying to be indelicate, folks, but you got to deal with this stuff in real terms. How many of you are prepared to deal with your parents' personal hygiene issues? I mean, seriously. In the kind of way that you understand that I'm talking about without me getting too graphic here. How many of you are prepared emotionally to do that? How many of you even know what I'm talking about? Go talk to somebody that's done it. They'll tell you. 4 out of 10 Americans are caregivers in one way or another. So the purpose of the statistics that I've just given you is to begin to set a basis for what I'm going to talk about in the second half hour of the show, which is what's available to help caregivers and to help the frail elderly and this war that's going on in which there are fewer and fewer and fewer resources being spent on the elderly, on seniors, on the disabled than there are in other places. And we're going to get very specific in the second half of the hour, and I'm going to point you to two other studies that you can go to, and you'll want to write them down. You'll want to take the time to go read them. You'll want to take the time to absorb them, and you'll begin to understand what I'm talking about when I say that that there is a definite sociological shift going on to how we begin to look at seniors and their finances and their money and their care and their health care and all of those kinds of things. During the timeout, during the break, go to my website, sign up for my next workshop, call me, send me an email, get in to see me, and let's make sure that you have a plan for that loved one in your family if you're going to be one of the 4 out of 10 Americans who becomes a caregiver during their life. Again, my phone number is 800-999-8007, 800-999-8007, or you can go to my webpage, assetsandaging.com. Again, assets, A-S-S-E-T-S, and A-N-D, aging.com. When I come back, we're going to talk about a couple other studies, and I think you're going to be amazed. We'll see you in just a second. Don't go away right here on Assets and Aging. Welcome back to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future. We're talking today about care and caregivers and the financial realities of all of this. I'm your host, Bob Scrivano. Bear with me today, folks, because this is important stuff. You need to understand this so that as you begin to read the newspaper and as you begin to understand what's happening to health care and what's happening in the long-term care world and what's happening and where assets are and all of those kinds of things, we're in the process of going through the greatest wealth transfer in the history of mankind as the World War II generation begins to die out and begins to pass on assets to the baby boomers. And then as the baby boomers begin to get older and die and leave it to the younger generation, we are going through the greatest wealth transfer in the history of mankind. And if you don't think government agencies and government institutions and other people are interested in that, you're not paying attention. So I want to give you some data and some background so that as you read articles and as you think about things and as you hear things in conversations, you can make sense out of them. I'm going to give you the names of both of the next studies. I will not get to both of them. There's no way. Both of the following studies come from the Kaiser Family Foundation, the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation, which is a foundation that deals with healthcare issues. And I'm going to give you the names of the two studies. You can write them down, or you can listen to this show again as it's archived when you're doing that, and you can write them down. I'll give you the names for the other two studies that you can Google and you can go read. The first one, and both of these are from the Henry J. Kaiser Family. What is it called? The Henry J. Kaiser. I can't even read it. Foundation. The Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation. And the first study is called, this is one's really important, Income and Assets of Medicare Beneficiaries 2014 to 2030. Let me give you the name of that study again because you will want to go read it. Income and Assets of Medicare Beneficiaries 2014 to 2030. I'm actually going to take a lot of this information and incorporate it into my upcoming workshops because I thought it was so important. This is very current. And the other study, also from the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation, and this is a little bit longer, but you can probably just Google this first sentence and it will get it to you. It's called Serving Low-Income Seniors Where They Live. Serving Low-Income Seniors Where They Live. They're both detailed studies, but they're very readable. You can understand them. They were designed for normal people, pardon me, to understand. Okay. I want to read this to you, and I'm starting with this study called Income and by the way, don't forget, you can always get a hold of me by calling me at 800-999-8007, 800-999-8007, or going to my website, assetsandaging.com. assetsandaging.com. I just felt I've been ruminating over these studies for 2 weeks, and I just thought they were so important that I needed to get to them somehow. Okay, I'm gonna be reading some stuff from these studies. Medicare population takes into account Social Security, pensions, earnings, and other income sources, including income from assets, rental income, and retirement income withdrawals. In other words, when they talk about money, they're talking about everything you can encompass within the concept of money and assets. And I'm going to read you the first statistic. Half, well, listen to this, because it stunned me. Half of all Medicare beneficiaries had incomes below $24,150 per person in 2014. That's the last year of this study. Pretty current. Any of you have been following anything, it hasn't gone up since then. Wait until I get to the second half of this study. You're not going to believe it. Listen to the next one. 25% of all Medicare beneficiaries had incomes below $14,350. So much for the myth of the wealthy senior. Yeah, 1% had big incomes. 1% had incomes over $163,000. 1%. 50% had incomes below $24,000, and 25% had incomes below $14,000. Now, as I keep going, I'm going to keep trying to connect the dots, but you got to bear with me. Median per capita income was substantially higher for white beneficiaries than for black beneficiaries or Hispanic. Whites on average $27,000 per person, black beneficiaries $16,000 per person, and Hispanic $12,000 per person as a Medicare beneficiary. That means somebody who's either disabled or 65 or older. Listen to this one. More than half of all beneficiaries age 85 and older lived on income of less than $18,850. More than half of all beneficiaries aged 85 and older lived on an income of less than $18,850. And yet, I've talked how many times about the odds of somebody needing long-term care? And one of the things, or the questions I've asked for 18 years is, who's going to take care of you, which we talked about in the previous study, primarily family. And then the second question is, how am I going to pay for it? Half of all people 85 and over are living on $18,000 a year or less. Now listen to this. For those of you that are only 65 and going, doesn't impact me, now listen to the projections for 2030. Incomes are projected to be 22% higher for beneficiaries in the top 5%, but for the middle class, by 2030, incomes are projected to be only 13% higher. So over the next 15 years, they expect income for Medicare beneficiaries to go up less than 1% a year. Stop and think about that for a minute. Now, what do you think the cost of care is going to do over the next 15 years? Do you think it's only going up 1% a year? So when I say connect the dots, I want you to connect the dots. All of you who got Social Security this year, 3 million new people got to sign up under Medi-Cal in California, paid for by the taxpayer. Seniors got no Social Security raise. Stop and think about that for a minute. Medicare does not come with food stamps. Different program. or what now they call it CalFresh. So if an assisted living facility costs $3,000 to $4,000 a month today, and you're 85 years old and you're living on an income of half of all people over age 85 are living on an income less than $18,000 a year, how do you connect those dots? I don't have an answer for you on all this stuff, folks. I'm just starting to ask questions that need to get asked. Everybody's all out there talking about this and that and that, and there's, you know, all kinds of elections going on, and there's all kinds of candidates talking about all kinds of stuff. Nobody is talking about the fact that in the next 15 years, the average income increase for Medicare beneficiaries will go up less than 1% a year. And yet the cost of care for those same beneficiaries in the next 15 years will probably double. I hope that made sense to you. We're comparing 2014 with 2030. I'm flipping pages here, and I'm going to go to another place. Oh, here it is, right here. In 2030, 25% of beneficiaries are projected to have... listen to this. In 2030, 25% of Medicare beneficiaries are projected to have incomes below $16,200, and half in 2030 will have incomes below $28,450. Now you say, but Bob, that's per person. If you're married, you're going to be rich. You're going to have $56,000, the average Medicare beneficiary in 2030. Great, until you need long-term care. So now when you need a caregiver at home, or you need assisted living, or you need a nursing home, how far is that $56,000 going to go if a nursing home in 2030 isn't $10,000 a month, it's $18,000 a month, and if an assisted living isn't $4,000 a month, it's $10,000 a month? In 2014, nearly all beneficiaries, Medicare beneficiaries, 92% had some savings. Half of all beneficiaries, Medicare beneficiaries in 2014, had savings below $63,000. One quarter of beneficiaries had savings below $11,900. How are they going to pay for long-term care? Now let's look into the future. As I read this, I had to read stuff 27 times over to make sure I was grasping what they were talking about here. And I did grasp it. In 2030, good news. Among the top 5% of Medicare beneficiaries, their average savings will go up 29% between now and 2030. Okay? For everybody else... okay, for everybody else, incomes will go up about 15%. I mean, savings will go up about 15% between now and 2030. In 2030, 25% of beneficiaries, remember, that's 15 years from now, folks. 25% of beneficiaries are projected to have savings below $23,900. And yet costs will have doubled. And have you heard anybody anywhere talk about any of this? We talk about other people making sure they get on the money. They get money. They get help. They get housing. They get medical care. They get everything else. And yet the people that paid into the system for 50 years, 60 years, aren't going to, in 2030, will have an average savings of, 25% of them will have an average savings of $23,900. Half of all people in 2030, Medicare beneficiaries will have savings below $100,000. And again, the cost of care is going to do what in the next 14 or 15 years? Now, let's go on to another one. Again, for those of you who don't believe anything I'm saying, in 2014, again, I'm reading from this Kaiser study called Income and Assets of Medicare Beneficiaries 2014 to 2030. In 2014, most Medicare beneficiaries, 76%, had some home equity in 2014. Half of all beneficiaries in 2014 who are on Medicare had less than $65,500 in equity in their home, and one-fourth of all Medicare beneficiaries had less than $5,200 in home equity in 2014. So people say all the time, well, they can just go get a reverse mortgage, they can just go do this, they can just go do this, they can just go do this. I hear that all the time. There are organizations everywhere who are pushing to get rid of Medicaid and Medi-Cal and just push people into reverse mortgages. There's a big outfit in a northern state that pushes and pushes and pushes this stuff. But if you only have $5,000 in home equity, how big a reverse mortgage are you going to get to help take care of yourself? I don't know. You answer the question. I mean, stop and think about that for a minute. Now let's look at 2030. Let's go to the good news. In 2030, home equity values among Medicare beneficiaries, I'm reading, adjusted for inflation, are projected to be moderately higher than they are in 2014, which, with much of the growth in home equity values among people in the top decile, that means the top 10%, their home equity will go up. However, the share of beneficiaries with home equity, 76%, is projected to remain flat. Median home equity in the next 14 years in the United States among people on Medicare is it projected to grow by approximately $5,400 or 8% over a 14-year period of time. You do the math. From $65,500 in 2014 to $79,000 in 2030 in average equity in their home. Do you begin to understand what I'm talking about here? The reality of all of this, folks, is that long-term care is not a part of the discussion. And I'm not, when I say long-term care, I'm not talking about long-term care insurance. Even that is getting harder to get because the state of California and other states have driven so many companies out with regulations and costs and fees so that it's gotten very expensive to even look at long-term care insurance. And if the average 85-year-old has an income of $18,000, he can't buy long-term care insurance anyhow because the premiums would be higher than that. Most 65-year-olds can't afford to buy long-term care insurance, at least not the way it's sold. And I'm a big fan of long-term care insurance. I don't sell it. I'm a big fan of it. So we're confronted with 4 out of every 10 Americans are caregiving in some way. That was the first study I read. Now we're taking a look at where we are today in real numbers, in average income, average assets, average home equity, and we're projecting that down to 2030, and we're finding out that statistically there's no variation. 14 years from now, the average Medicare beneficiary is going to have about the same equity, about the same amount of assets, and about the same income as they do today. from all sources. And yet the cost of care is doing what? Do you think hospitals are getting richer or poorer? And yet seniors are bounced out of hospitals on a daily basis because they're observed, not admitted. We've talked about this before. On a daily basis. People don't understand what Medi-Cal is and how it works. People don't understand there's no community-based systems. The second study I had is on Medicaid, serving low-income seniors where they live. Medicaid's role in providing community-based long-term care services. There aren't any. You can't get IHSS. You can't get in the waiver program because there's no money and the waiting period is a year and a half or 2 years long for assisted living through Medi-Cal. Recovery is only against seniors. There's no recovery if you're 35 years old and you get on Medi-Cal because you're low income and you own a house. In fact, for some Medi-Cal programs in California, you don't even have to prove assets. All you have to prove is income. And that's true in other states too. I've been saying for years that the real time bomb waiting to go off is not Social Security, it's Medicare. Because Medicare does not provide the kind of care that people think that it does when it comes to long-term care, or as the study likes to call it, long-term services and supports, or LTSS, long-term service and support. There needs to be more community-based care. There needs to be more access to the PACE program. Right now, a wonderful program to help people with dementia get daycare. It's only available in, what, 5 counties or 6 counties in California? Whoop, whoop, whoop-de-doo. So what's going to be the answer? And as you listen to people talk and you listen to politicians talk and you listen to people under the dome talk, listen to what the discussion is about. And is any of it about connecting the dots between the growing costs of taking care of our frail elderly and our disabled and the reality that those beneficiaries' income, assets, and home equity are going to remain virtually unchanged between today and 2030. Now, I don't have time to go into it. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't wear tinfoil hats and that kind of stuff. But I am capable of connecting dots. And I'm able to connect the dots and see where the money's going. I'm able to connect the dots and see that politicians get raises every year and different groups get raises every year and all of that. Yet those people who were Medicare beneficiaries who have paid into this healthcare system for all these years, their income, their assets, their equity will not change, but their cost will go up and the availability of community-based services is almost non-existent. Yes, Medi-Cal has a program called in-home support services. You know how hard it is to get it, and you know that the maximum number of hours is about 283 a month. And the average person gets 50 hours a month of help at home. Well, Bob, what about hospice? Hospital come in twice a month and twice a week and give somebody a bath. That's not the kind of support that people need to be able to stay in the community and not wind up in nursing homes. And I wish I had time to read from the other report because it gets into that a lot about the lack of focus we have on community-based support for seniors and the disabled and putting all of our for instance, well, never mind. I don't have time to go into it and I'll get started and I won't be able to make a point. Look up the studies, read them, pay attention, and then decide whether or not it's worth it to take your time to put together a plan so that for your mom or your dad or you or whoever, you're going to be able to deal with this you-know-what when it hits the you-know-what. I cannot tell you how many people walk into my office unprepared for the fact that they're now dealing with long-term care issues for themselves or a spouse. It wasn't supposed to happen. It's not supposed to happen. Yet the first study I read you says what? 4 out of 10 Americans are caregivers. And yet we ignore it, and we ignore it at our own peril, and we ignore this war on seniors and the frail elderly and the disabled at our own peril. Are you prepared? Have you made a plan? Have you figured it out? Have you talked about it as a family? Get in to see me. Take advantage of the resource you have here and on my website and at my workshops. Get involved. I'll come and speak to your group or organization anytime for free. All you have to do is contact me. But the war is real. The responsibility is real. The toll on caregivers is real. Read the studies. Read my newsletters when they come out. If you're not on my newsletter list, go to my website and get on it. I'm sorry I didn't have more time. There's just not enough time to get into all of it. So make sure you continue to listen, re-listen to this show, listen to my podcast, get to my workshop, and make sure you're informed so that you don't become a victim of this war. I want to thank you so much for listening. Thanks for letting me in to your homes and your offices and your cars and wherever else. Thanks for supporting this show for all these years. I hope this has been of value to you and will continue to be valuable to you. Tell other people about this show. Have them listen to Assets and Aging or go to my website. I hope you have a wonderful day, a wonderful week, and that your life is full. Go help somebody who needs your help. I'll talk to you next week, same time, same place. Have a wonderful, wonderful day.